Wonderful day. But especially, let's be thankful and give thanks to our Father who gave us life and who gave us hope of a very glorious future. And so, in that respect, though, I want to talk about really what is the greatest gift you can give your Father, and that is to do good with your life, to be blessed and understand your blessings, to live well, be productive, have peace and patience and kindness and all of those things that our Father wants for us. And in that regard, I think one of the great purposes God teaches us is about doing good. And so just a reminder to all of us to not stop doing good to everyone, as Galatians chapter 6 talks about. First couple of slides here are actually a review of a lesson I did last year. So this is sort of a part two, but I want to kind of hit at something else in regards to this idea of pressing on and not getting stuck wherever we might, whatever might happen to us. And sometimes traumatic things can happen to us. Sometimes difficult situations can come upon us. Trials and things can slow us down and cause us to almost want to go back into a shell. And we want to kind of protect ourselves. You know, they talk about cocooning and it becoming kind of a popular thing in recent decades. And I think the pandemic, for those who are inclined to try and cocoon and, you know, shut out the outside world, the pandemic, I think, made it worse for many, especially those who are already suffering from anxieties and different mental issues. It really brought on a great deal of additional mental trauma and a tendency or a temptation to withdraw and to just try and take care of the self and not be active in other people's lives. And so I think that's one of the things that we have to remind ourselves, that as Christians, our goal isn't to just have our own good life. Our goal is to have a life that not only we can have peace, but that we go out and we are connected with other people so that we can do good. And wherever that leads us and wherever that takes us. I've been thinking about this for quite a while. I was thinking about, it seems like there might be a bit of a bell curve. If you remember science, you know, the bell curve high in the middle. And it seems to me 40 to 50 is probably somewhere in that middle. People who are around 40-ish to 50 often find themselves the most busy. You have kind of risen up in your jobs to be kind of management a lot of times. You have kids. And then as you get, you know, a little bit older, you might be having kids and grandkids. And all of a sudden, you seem like you also might be getting to that point where you're now taking care of your parents. And all of a sudden, you become the person that everybody's looking to. Instead of you at one point looking to your parents, when you needed help, when you needed bailing out, when you were like in trouble, you're like, I can always turn to my parents. Well, there comes a day when they're not there for you. And they're going to need your help. And so it kind of happens somewhere in that point where we get super busy. And so somewhat be prepared for that if you're younger. That, you know, when you're young, a lot of times when we're young, the complaint is there's nothing to do. Except now they have, you know, they have supercomputers in their hands. They should be like probably almost glued to their hands because they almost never lose them. But supercomputers that kind of give information all over the world to bring to their eyes on a constant basis, instead of being, you know, in that point of childhood in generations past where, you know, how often you told your parents that I'm bored, and you really didn't repeat that very often to your parents because they would make you not bored. And they would give you things to do that you wouldn't want to do, and you would stop using that line to them. But when we're young, we may not be terribly productive in doing good to others. But we're in that phase of training, of learning, of growing. But by the time we reach 20, God has an expectation that we have an understanding of what is right and what is good, and that we practice it. But you're really just starting. In fact, you can see this. Mendel talked about the priesthood. The priest didn't, even though the priests all those descendants of Aaron, they got a portion of the tithes given to the guy that were given to the temple and to the priests. Every family got their portion from smallest to oldest. They didn't really start working as a priest till 20. And then the high priest couldn't start till he was 30. But then they also retired them when they were older and stopped them from working in the temple. That didn't mean they didn't have wisdom to share, didn't have advice for those who were younger, but there came a time they would no longer keep doing that when they were older. And do we see that kind of same thing happen in life? When we hit 20, give or take 20 years old, you're kind of expected to start providing for yourself. Up to that point, you're probably being provided for in one fashion or another to different degrees. But then, from 20 to 60 and maybe beyond, we have to provide for ourselves. Now, throughout human history, when people got older, one of the reasons that their inheritance was their children is because when you got older, you didn't have Social Security and you didn't have, you know, tons of money in a bank account, because oftentimes people lived, talk about paycheck to paycheck, they often lived day to day. I mean, they got paid daily because they could buy food for every day. And so, very often when you're older, you're being taken care of, and that was just expected. And that's still true, by the way, in lots of societies around the world. It's not as that true in America, I mean, not true maybe a lot of Western Europe, but a lot of societies still have that kind of process that you're taken care of when you're young, you're going to be taken care of when you're older, and during that middle part, when you're at your strongest and maybe, you know, clearest thinking, you're going to be the one taking care of those who are younger and those who are older. And so, but every single phase still has productivity in it. There's still things everybody can do, whether you're young or whether you're old. It may not be as much. It may not, circumstances might dictate how much and how well you can do it, but all of us can do something. And all of us need to think in terms of what can I do to be productive. I am not in any way talking about making a paycheck. Paychecks are a kind of modern thing that, you know, I mean, before cultures were, before the mechanical age came into being, everybody was essentially agrarian, and everybody, you know, provided for themselves by growing food or working for that food. And so we have kind of a different setup and system, but work isn't about paychecks. Being productive, working. Everybody works or they don't eat, as scriptures tell us. That doesn't mean everybody gets a paycheck or you don't eat. That means everybody provides something to the whole. Everybody does something in every household. And so, like, even when your kids are young, they need to do something. Do what they can do. When we get older, may not be able to do everything, but we do what we can do. Everybody provides. And so, just as a reminder, Galatians 6, 9 to 10, let us not grow weary in doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, especially to those who are of the household of faith. If we don't give up, if we don't stop trying to do good for others, we will reap. God will help us. He will give us our share because of that. But why does he say, don't grow weary of doing good? How many times in your life, I'm not even going to ask you if you've ever received it, because I know you've all felt it. It's just, how many times in your life have you felt like giving up because you're tired? And you're putting out and you're not receiving back. Whether it's to kids, whether it's to friends, whether it's at work, you keep doing, and they don't reward it. They don't give back. We all go through that at times. We all face that at times. But what he's urging us to do is not fall into the trap of cocooning ourselves away from the world. That is a trap that's not hurting the people in the world. It's hurting us. And so I talked about Romans 2. Everyone will reap according to what they have done. Not going to go into a lot of those passages. And the next thing I talked about last year, good deeds are never meaningless. Even if nobody knows here, if nobody says anything to you for doing a good deed, how often have you heard yourself or somebody else thinking, oh, I keep doing all this good stuff and you know people didn't thank me and people weren't appreciative. And what'd you do? And people give up. They stop. Right? So he's like, the problem is good deeds, good things that we can do are never meaningless even if nobody responds right or well. And that's the thing he's trying to tell us. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 15:58, therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. So if he told us to not grow weary in doing good to everybody, then doing good to everybody is never vain. It's never meaningless. And that's the thing he wants us to get and understand. I talked about it also last week. What if Jesus stopped because people didn't respond like he had hoped? Which happened a lot, by the way. I brought up the passage in John 6 after Jesus talked about them needing to eat his flesh and drink his blood. He grossed everybody out to the point that they wanted to leave. And they did. All the thousands of people around him, they left. And he turns around to his own disciples and those who would be his apostles, and he said, do you want to leave too? And their answer was, no, we would never want to leave you. Now their answer was, where else can we go? Now they are saying no, they don't want to leave, but they're like, they weren't overly thrilled with his words either. They were hard words to accept. They didn't understand the spiritual nature of them rather than the fleshly nature of them. But they were difficult words. They were hard words. John 14, he told them about, you know, going away. And he's the way, the truth, and the life. And where I'm going, you know, you know. And you know, Philip is like, well, we don't have any idea what you're talking about. And he says, have I been with you so long, Philip, and you still don't know me? He's like, well, show us the Father. And he's like, I've shown you the Father. You saw me. I have shown you the Father. But they still didn't get it. Right here, he's about to be killed. And he's thinking, they're still not getting it. Now, and that's why for us, like Hebrews 12 talks about, that we need to run our race with endurance. Live our life with an endurance like somebody who's going to run a race. Prepare for it. Train for it. Keep going. Keep doing it. Keep training. Keep going. And he says, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher or founder and finisher of our faith, who for the joy set before him despised the shame and sat down at the right hand of God. We need to do the same thing. So all of these passages urging us to just keep going, not even counting Paul's talking about pressing on to the end. This is the part I want to talk. Two passages that I want to kind of look at this morning. And that is in 2 Thessalonians 3, and then we're going to look at 1 Thessalonians 4, where the first teaching came in. But this is kind of, in 1 Thessalonians, that first letter, he was telling them what they should do. In the second letter, he's correcting them. I'm hearing you're not really doing this. And that's not good. And so he's telling them here in chapter 3, in 6 through 13, he says, now we command you, brothers, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you keep away from any brother who's not walking in idleness and not in accord with the tradition that you received from us. Now, often this passage we look at about how do we, you know, keep away from brothers. And that becomes the focus of this passage. But I want to focus on the things he's actually saying that they should be not doing that they're doing. And that is, he says, they were walking in idleness. Now, doesn't that actually seem contradictory? Walking is a term meaning you're doing some activity, that you're doing something. But then he says idleness. Well, in English, it says idleness. I'm going to tell you. It doesn't really mean idleness the way most of us think about it. This word really means to be more irresponsible. It's not that you're not doing anything. It's like if you saw you know, your young, you know, teenager, and they're just kind of sitting there doing nothing, you know, not on a computer, not on the TV, which would be really like a miracle. But probably you'd have to have your power would have to be out, and all the cell towers would have to be down for that to happen. But if you saw them doing that, just sitting there doing nothing, you go, do something. Go outside, run around, play or something. Or go mow the lawn. But that's not really what the complaint here is, that they're walking in idols. The complaint is they're actually probably busy on a computer or a phone or doing something that they really shouldn't be doing, and it's not helpful. It's not good for them. It's not helpful for them. It's not productive for them. And that's really the idea of this particular word of idleness that this gets translated to. That it's behavior that is irresponsible. And that's how they're walking. And he says, and we'll see it here in a second towards the end, as he continues on, and for you yourselves know how you ought to imitate us, because we were not idle when we were with you, nor do we eat anyone's bread without paying for it, but with toil and labor we worked night and day that we might not be a burden to you. So provided for themselves. They worked. They were productive. They provided for themselves. And he says, he's saying they're not doing that. They're doing other things that are not being productive. And so he says, in verse 9, it was not because we did not have the right, but to give you in ourselves an example to imitate. For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. For we hear that some among you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but busybodies. Now, and this is verse 11. So some, this is what he's hearing. We told you that everybody needs to do something. Everybody pitches in. It's a little bit like a family, right? Everybody kind of does something. Everybody, if you don't do some portion of the work, you don't get to eat of the feast. And so, but he says they're walking in idleness. And now he kind of clarifies a little bit. They're not busy at work. What are they doing? They're busy bodies, what we call nosy. They're being irresponsible and they're being nosy in other people's business. Now, I'll just put this out to you. Human beings have been busybodies forever. As long as human beings have existed, we have often been in each other's business too much. We've been reading each other's mail too often and far too involved in other people's issues. It's like, mind our own business, do your own thing, and unless other people ask for your help, don't stick your nose in. And so people are good at that. I suspect we're getting even better at that because I think social media does a couple of things. One, we invite a lot of people to be nosy in our business by posting a lot of it. And then we decide, because people have posted, we ought to then start chiming in about their life. And so we've kind of elevated how nosy we can get in people's lives. But the thing is exactly the same. Stay out of other people's business. And mind yours. What's your job? What is your life? What is your to-do? Do that. Don't worry about somebody else. God will take care of that. Now, if your job is to help other people, help them when you can. Ask them, do you need a hand? But we need to not be nosy. Busybodies, as he said. And then just kind of finish up this little section. He says, now such persons we command and encourage the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work quietly and to earn their own living. This work quietly doesn't mean without talking. It means the idea of peaceful and serene and content. Okay, that's the idea. As for you, brothers, he says in verse 13, do not grow weary in doing good. Much like he wrote to the Galatians. Now, let's go back. And in chapter 4 of 1 Thessalonians, this is where he initially had told them. This is what the aim is. This is what we're looking for. And I just reduced it to productive and peaceful. Now, you could expand that a lot, in a lot of ways. But what he's telling us and urging them, he says, concerning brotherly love, we have no need for anyone to write to you. For you yourselves have been taught by God to love one another. For that indeed is what you are doing to all the brothers throughout Macedonia. So that sounds great, right? It's like, hey, you already know about loving, about, you know, you've been taught by God to have brotherly love for one another, and you've been doing that throughout the whole region, and that's great. What he urges them is don't just accept where you are. Grow in some way, little bit, a little thing. What little thing can you do to get a little better? That's all he's asked. He says, but we urge brothers to do this more and more, to aspire or to aim, to make this your goal, to live quietly. I actually think this is something when you're young, very often you don't want. You want to have broad, exciting lives. You want to have, you know, big adventures and all kinds of stuff rather than a quiet, peaceful life. Now, the older you get, the more you will realize a quiet, peaceful life is not easy to come by. Having that aim and that goal is a very productive thing for your life, because it is not easy. There will always be a lot of stuff to come at you from this world to get you distracted and to get you going in every direction. Make this your aim, a quiet life, a peaceful, content, being content where you are, like I talked about a week or two ago. And he says, to mind your own affairs, not other people's. What is my responsibility? That's what I need to worry about. And I need to actively shut myself off from worrying about other people's stuff. Because I don't know, I'm assuming you, most of you are like me too. It's really easy to look at other people and think, oh, well, they should do this or they should do that, right? We all have an opinion about what other people should or shouldn't do. And you have to actively tell yourself to stop it. Stop that. Quit it. Not my business. It really, for me anyway, and I'm assuming it's probably true for all of us, you have to really actively stop yourself from getting your nose stuck in other people's business. And that's what he's telling them. And so he's saying, mind your own affairs. Work with your hands. Your hand. You work. You do something. Now, he's not literally saying your job has to be manual labor, but he's saying you need to do something. You need to produce something with your life. You need to be productive in with the time you have been given in this world. And like I said, this isn't about a paycheck. If you had all the money in the world and you were given all the money you could have, does that mean you should just go, you know, be the trust fund baby on a yacht not doing anything? No. Regardless of how much money you have or don't have, you should be productive. That's what God wants from you. That's the greatest gift we can give our Father who has given us life, is to be productive with our time. And he says, to work with your hands as we instructed you so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. Now, that last section, think about it. You're teaching that. You teach that to children, right? It's not, your job is not to be dependent upon us forever. Your job is to grow up, learn, and to produce, to take care of yourself. At some point, you may also get to the point where you can't take care of yourself and others are going to take care of you. He's not talking about the exceptions of that typically happen at the ends or maybe happen because we're disabled in some way. But the general principle is to take care of yourself and then to try and help others also. Because if all of us were dependent upon others, who ends up bearing the whole load? Usually just a few, right? And those people usually end up getting kind of worn out, burned out from it. And so our job, this is what we're aiming at. This is the center of the target. We're trying to be productive with our time. At the same time, being full of peace and joy and content with the current circumstances of our life. That is a trial. And as many of you know, it's certainly a trial that I've endured and been going through for the last year. And, you know, and it's a challenge to figure out how to be content in the most difficult of circumstances. And it's one that in some respects, I'm actually glad I have this opportunity to be grow in this way. Not just for my sake, but for everyone's, all of us, we're going to have situations that make us and challenge us. And what he's urging for us is to find your peace, find your joy, find your contentment, regardless of the circumstances, and do something good. We'll leave it there today. I appreciate everybody's time.